Whether you are under the sea right now, on a ship, in the sky, parachuting in a plane, or on land, driving to work, welcome back. This is Justin from BeyondTheUniform.io, where my goal is to give veterans the tools they need to be successful in their civilian career. My guest today is John Pentrello.
A lot of stress goes into transition and thinking about what's next. That trust in the system, that being a high performer, that having a positive attitude, doing to get things done, is going to work out. You're going to hit a lot of stumbling blocks along the way. There's going to be a lot of uncertainty, a lot of opaqueness in your future. But if you just have that positive attitude and keep going forward, you're going to be fine.
Reasons to listen to John's interview today. He talks about his experience both at Harvard Business School and then going back a few years later to the Harvard Kennedy School of Government to get his Master's of Public Administration. John entered into the oil and energy industry as part of Cameron Company. He talks about his roles as both corporate development manager and plant manager, what a career progression looks like in the oil and energy industry, and more. So here's my interview with John. All right. Well, my guest today is John Pentrello. John, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Justin.
So quick background on John. John graduated from the Naval Academy and served for 9 years as a naval aviator as part of the Helicopter Maritime Strike Squadron. After getting out of the Navy, he attended Harvard Business School. And once he received his MBA from Harvard, he entered the oil and energy industry as part of Cameron, which is a publicly traded company with over 10,000 employees. John started as a corporate development manager and then worked his way up to plant manager. Now he's back at Harvard, earning his Master's of Public Administration at their Kennedy School of Government. So, John, to start off, anything I'm missing from your background you'd like people to know about you?
No, I think you nailed it on that. I think your background is accurate.
Awesome. Well, I always like to start off just asking you at what point you knew you were going to leave the military and how you approached that decision.
Yeah, so I always had an inkling that I might, after my first operational tour, so after flight school and after the fleet replacement squadron, and so I had an inkling I might do that then. So I decided to, I had some downtime between my first and second tour, my instructional tour, and took the opportunity to take the GMAT because we didn't have students flowing through the squadron at the time. There wasn't that many helicopters, so I had a lot of downtime to study, and I took that early on. Got a good score that indicated that it might be competitive for a top-tier business school and sort of kept that in my back pocket so that when it became time where I firmed up that decision towards the end of my initial commitment, that I had that ready to go.
That's great. And when you did exit the Navy, did you join the reserves, and how did you think about whether or not to join?
I actually did not join the reserves at the time. I was serving on individual augmentation overseas in Mosul, Iraq at the time that I was doing all of my out processing. So I didn't really have too much time to explore the reserve option at that point. I later revisited that option when I was at HBS and decided not to pursue that. But I know many people that did and enjoyed it and are doing well in the reserves.
And looking back at that transition when you went from Navy to civilian, in retrospect, what was one of the most surprising aspects of that transition? What was maybe unexpected in the transition or something you didn't know about what life would be like as a civilian?
Sure. I think that the language spoken in the business world was something that was maybe not emphasized enough in the transition. So when I got to business school and was interacting with people that had previously been consultants or bankers or in the private sector, they spoke a completely different language that there's no class on how to do that, or there's no book on how to read to build that. So I think that was one of the most surprising things. Everything else is sort of what I expected. Mm.
And during your time at Harvard, well, I guess starting with Harvard, how did you consider going straight to grad school versus directly into industry?
Yeah, that's easy. Since I was a pilot, I had the 8-year commitment from the time I earned my wings. So it was to the point where I sort of had to go right to grad school. I was going to age out of going to grad school, or at least be on the upper, the way to the right on the spectrum of the age. So I had to do that. So that's an easy one for me. But I think people were very successful and that had shorter commitments that got out, did a few years in the private sector, and then went to business school. I think that's an excellent path to take.
And for those who are thinking of applying to business school and Harvard in particular, what advice would you give them about the application process or how to make them more appealing candidates?
Yeah, I mean, my standard advice, and I lived it and I still give it, is prepare early, whether it's getting the test done early, which I did, so in case you don't get the grade that you need or want the first time around, you have plenty of time. Doing that under the gun of the application cycle, it isn't usually productive. I would say that as far as prepping themselves to be more attractive, if they're a top performer in the military, that story is going to come through. Or even just a good performer in the military, that story is going to come through on their resume and their essays and the story they tell on their application. But if you're a low performer, if you sort of have a poor attitude or just are unsatisfied with the military experience, that's going to come through as well. So just you have to, you know yourself and know your story.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it seems like sometimes when I'm talking with people about applying to business school, they're trying to devote a lot of time to side projects to try and make them look like a better candidate. And I agree. It's like, no, your number one duty is your job. Like, focus 90% of your energy of just knocking that out. One, just because it is your job and you should be doing that anyways, but also because that's going to be the biggest indicator of whether or not you'll succeed on the outside. Past success is the best indicator of future success.
Right. I agree that, you know, having Habitat for Humanity on your resume, while noble, is not going to be the straw that tips the scales in your favor for admission. So, yes, focusing on being a top performer, focus on nailing your job, whatever that job is in the military is the best advice. So I agree with you 100%.
And you had talked about the GMAT, the test to take before business school. I'm not sure if you mentioned, but how far out did you start preparing for that? And do you have any tips or advice for tools people should consider for how to best prepare for that exam?
Yeah, definitely. So I started preparing actually 5 years out, just because I said I ran into serendipitously. I ran into just some downtime where we just weren't really flying a lot or doing much. So I said, well, let's not waste that time. I took the time to get in great shape and study a lot for the GMAT, but not everybody has that. A lot of people are running into high op tempo deployment cycles, schools. So I would say that, as I said, do it early, do it a few years out, not too far out because of the 5-year limit on the GMAT, but, you know, 2 or 3 years out is certainly fine, or a year out from the application process is fine. I recommend that everybody in the military, the transitioning veteran, take the course. I can't recommend a brand. I took Kaplan. I thought it was great. Manhattan is good feedback. I think Kaplan might own Manhattan, but any one of the courses is great. And then once you take the prep courses, and whether it's 1,000 or 1,500, whatever it is, for the course, there's discounts for military personnel. You know, do every single test problem. Do exactly what they say. Don't treat that like a Navy school where maybe 100% effort isn't always given. Give that 100%, and you will get. If you do everything they say, you will get the score you are meant to get.
That's great. I also like with what you're saying about how 5 years out you had the downtime, and it's just reminding me of how individual each person's path is. And like you said, some people might not have that time that far out. And so I guess the broader takeaway is when you have that downtime in the military, really take advantage of that and start to invest in your transition. And that sounds like is exactly what you did.
I 100% agree. And whether that's preparing for the GMAT or whether that's going to see your friends that are out that now work in the private sector or going visiting business schools, even not in the year, or law schools, or whichever graduate school you're going to go to, not the year before or during the application process, even prior. Take advantage of all the downtime you can get when you have it, whether it's post-deployment, pre-deployment, if you intend on transitioning or if you're even thinking about it. Mm.
And when you look back on your time at Harvard Business School, what did you like least about it, and what did you like most about your time there?
It's tough to say like least, because I did enjoy the entire experience. I would say that coming in and not having some of the tactical tools of business, such as, and just to be, is very simple. I mean, I had never used Excel before outside of some basic things, despite the fact that we think we know PowerPoint. In the military, you really don't, compare to a consultant or a banker. So coming in and that was kind of annoying, that I didn't have the tactical skills to be sort of value added to a group or a project or a class on day one. But it wasn't something I disliked. It was just sort of a fact of that I was dedicated to my craft of being an aviator and an officer, not exactly, jockeying a spreadsheet around for most of my time in the military. Mm.
And what did you like most about it?
I thought the bonding experience of most top tier graduate schools, but Harvard in particular seems to throw a lot of effort at not forced networking or forced bonding, but allowing an ecosystem where you genuinely leave with dozens, if not hundreds, of new good friends and best friends. And it felt effortless to just bond with the classmates. So now they're a text or a phone call or a Skype away around the world and in any industry that you can think of.
Mm, that's great. And on that lease side, you know, you talked about feeling behind on the Excel side and other areas. Is there any way you can think of that someone could anticipate and try and offset that apart from business school? Or is it just that's one thing to anticipate that when you go to business school, you'll have to spend some time buffing up on those skills?
Yeah, no, I actually think there is a way to get ahead of this. And I've told this to several veterans that are transitioning into business school. There are online courses now that were not available when I went to business school. And you went before me, so I don't think they were available when you went. That are phenomenal teaching tools with tutorials for videos and practical exercises that can get you where you need to be, but get you a lot further than where you are in terms of financial modeling, understanding how to build complex spreadsheets and stuff like that. It will not get you to where a banker or consultant is, but will get you to a position where you feel much more confident. And the reason isn't just to be good at a spreadsheet. I firmly believe that when you prep like that and you get there, you can spend less time stressing about learning a tactical skill and more time on job seeking or other sort of value-added activities for your career.
That's great. Yeah, I for some reason I never even thought about that, but all of the online classes right now, all the free, even free resources, I bet there's a ton of stuff on YouTube and on different sites where you could really, if you devoted the time, start to learn how to work with Excel and do basic financial modeling. And I know that would have given me, like you said, a lot more room to focus on other things rather than just bulking up on the basics while at business school.
Yep, correct, 100% on that.
And you mentioned the GI Bill. Any advice on that or thoughts on how to work that in with grad school?
Yeah, so I think just this is one like common error that people make is most people with a 4 or 5 year commitment, you have to watch your timing. So you have to do, I think it's 90 days beyond your initial commitment of a 4 year commitment or a 5 year commitment if you're academy in order to get the 40% to the minimum. So just watch your timing on that in terms of your end of active service date. If you're doing a short commitment, typically aviators, submariners, people with extended commitments don't have that problem. They've already hit that wicket. Mm.
That's something I wish I would have known. Staying in just a little bit longer would have made a huge financial difference.
It is a huge financial amount, and not having to service debt post-graduation or have minimal vice the huge amount the GI Bill wipes out also sort of lessens stress along the way that debt overhang isn't going to be waiting for you upon graduation.
Mm. And looking at your time at Cameron, how did you, when you were leaving business school, how did you decide on entering the oil and energy industry?
Well, you know, Cameron, very quietly, now they're part of Schlumberger, was a very big HBS affiliate, meaning they had a lot of HBS grads working there. I think at the high water mark, there was 25. And they weren't short timers. Most had high tenure. They took about 2 or 3 a year, I think 4 at their peak in terms of a class size coming in. About half were former engineers, either within the industry or adjacent industries, and half were former military. So it was a company that not only recognized the value of an MBA, but also recognized the value of a veteran MBA, particularly from HBS. They didn't recruit from other schools for MBAs. I'm not saying there wasn't there. They just didn't actively recruit. So I took a look at a company that knew how to employ me, both the MBA skills and sort of the operational leadership skills on day one. And that sort of made my decision very easy to do that. I was sort of industry agnostic, although I do believe that energy is an extremely important industry, whether it's the fossil fuel side or the clean tech side. So I was happy to be in an important industry that I was passionate about.
And for someone on active duty, how would you describe Cameron as a company, what they do, and just kind of what else drew you to them?
Oh, yeah. So it's, like I said, it's in the energy industry, which I'm passionate about. Most you know, military folks, whether you knew it or not, you were either, you know, guarding infantry or energy infrastructure throughout your tours, or you're doing something along that mission as part of our national strategy. So it's something I knew something about. Be their manufacturing company and a services company that basically makes a lot of stuff. So you put a product line goes from upstream to downstream that goes into the industry. So they're operationally driven, means they have to make something, not just a slide deck or put a deal together. They actually have to go and actually do that. So I did like that fact that there was the business was tangible. So I liked all of that. And I got to see both the finance and strategy side as a corporate development manager, and then be sort of boots on the ground operational, running a plant for them that we actually had to every day. We had to ship product.
Hmm. And when you started out, it was as in the functional role of a corporate development manager. For someone on active duty, how would you explain the basic function of what a corporate development manager is and what they do?
A corporate development manager works for the chief financial officer, the CFO, on a team of other corporate development managers and directors that essentially executes the company strategy of either acquiring companies or divesting certain portions of themselves. So instead of using external bankers for everything, this internal team will handle small acquisitions. There wasn't a number on that, but small-ish in terms of the number scale. And then work with the bankers and the lawyers to execute sort of larger deals that were $500 million or close to $1 billion in size, or either sell or buy. And you'd report directly to the C-suite in order to execute these. You also work with each division on their strategies in terms of what they want to go and acquire. The company can either grow robustly through R&D, which most companies in the industry don't, or they just go and acquire smaller companies that have the technologies they want. We'd help them go find those companies.
That's great. That's a great, great summary. And I always like to try and paint that picture for people on active duty of what that translated to in terms of your day to day. What was your like typical day like? What sorts of people were you interacting with? What sort of work were you doing? If you could just paint that picture.
Yeah. So first off, just from a high level, it's very autonomous, meaning I wasn't reporting into a boss every day. They expected you both as somebody who's a top-tier MBA, but also a former military person, a veteran, to be able to get stuff done on your own and manage your own schedule. So that was actually a big plus of the job. No one was peeking at my desk either early or late to see if I was there, but all the work was expected to get done. Day-to-day, some of it involved grunt work, so just putting together those spreadsheets we talked about or presentations for either acquisitions or divesting, selling certain parts of the company. Presenting that to division leadership, to the C-suite, sometimes putting together slides for board meetings, and then working with either upper, middle, or senior level management every day. To put it in sort of blunt military terms, or somebody with no business experience, you're an action officer for basically the four stars. They would need something done or have a vision, and you would go execute that for them, and then you would work with sort of like the one and two stars to make that happen. I hope that's a good analogy for someone on active duty.
Yeah, totally. And did your job involve a lot of travel and weekend work? What was like the lifestyle component like?
Okay, so travel, I'd probably put it percentage-wise, about 10 to 15% of your time was traveling. In my case, my first trip to Bordeaux, France, and then following that was to Oslo in the middle of the summer, so not really tough travel for me. And then I took a couple other trips to the Netherlands on business in the middle of the summer as well, which was wonderful. But all kidding aside, it was not that much travel. There was some domestic travel. In terms of lifestyle, I'd say the day-to-day was a 9-to-5 job. But as I said, a lot of the role was project-driven. So nobody was checking if you're at your desk, but you had deadlines to meet, often self-imposed in order to complete projects or complete presentations or gather information. So if you needed to have your laptop flipped up at home and keep doing work until whenever you needed to get that work done, it was good. Conversely, if work was slow, you were expected to be out in the division learning about things, and you didn't have to sort of make work to look busy, which was actually a very nice part of the role. The point being, if the workload dictated your schedule, not the other way around.
That's great. That's great. And looking back at that, you know, the first couple years out of the military at during business school and then at Cameron, in what ways did you feel ahead of your civilian counterparts because of your military experience? And in what ways did you feel like you had to catch up the most?
I would say I felt ahead in sort of the operations and leadership functions, that knowing how to get stuff done without having to ask other people. knowing how to delegate to subordinates, and then just being mission-driven in terms of not letting anything stop you from completing your task, your project, or your program. So that's sort of, I think, embedded in high-performing military officers, and that's not something you can actually, despite what a lot of people in the private sector know, it's not something that you can actually just, you know, be imbued with. That has to be learned, and I think that's a good learned behavior that you carry out. One of the things I felt behind on was a lot of corporate and technical knowledge within the industry I was in. There isn't a course, already a course that someone's going to walk you into and say, just sit down for 2 weeks here, and by the end, you're going to know it. You have to go out and find a lot of that information. It's not embedded in a NATOPS manual or for an aviator or a reactor manual if you're a sub guy or something like that. You have to go and piece that information together yourself. And I felt that people that have been in the industry a lot longer than me or grown up in it, they just knew this intrinsic knowledge that was there that was hard to find. But you eventually go do it. Point being, no one's going to hand it to you like they would in the military where they say, read this book and you'll know that. You have to go get it. Mm.
Yeah, it makes me realize how much in the military, in a lot of ways, you're spoon-fed in training and in career progression and in everything. It's like an incredible system where they're constantly helping you to the next step. And I'm not sure I realized that when I was in the military, but in retrospect and by comparison to civilian life, there is not really a roadmap outside and there's not that hand-holding. And so you do have a lot more autonomy and personal responsibility to figure things out and chart your own course.
Yeah, and I think those people that function well in that environment survive, that they function in an environment that's a bit opaque, that they have to go out and find information out, execute it, don't listen at all. So I say people that like being spoon-fed, the transition is going to be a lot harder for them.
That's a really good observation. And after your job as a corporate development manager, you moved on to becoming a plant manager. And similar thing here, how would you explain what a plant manager is and what's that day-to-day life look like?
A plant manager is very similar to being a ship CO or a unit CO or a squadron commander. So you have your plant, you have both your floor workers who are actually making the product and then your office workers who are filling functions such as planning, purchasing, buying, accounts payable, accounts receivable, inside sales, all those corporate functions that exist within a business unit. And your job, you're held responsible for the profit and loss of your product line and your plant. So a lot of the day-to-day was solving problems such as why, you know, there was certain bottlenecks within the assembly line, if you had inventory problems, attacking those. And then things like holding town halls for everybody and handing out BZs. And literally, I'm a Navy person, I handed out BZs to people for good jobs, praising people and keeping communication up. And it was the same thing as an all-hands call or a E4 through E6 call. And then holding staff meetings with your staff, which is exactly like a staff meeting in the military for officers and senior enlisted. So that's what it was. Day-to-day. We started, our first shift came on at 6:30 and I would get there around 7:00, I would say till 5 or 5:30, and our second shift ran until 11 at night. And we did not have a third shift, although our machines ran overnight, our automatic machines ran overnight, keeping parts going. And a lot of it was, I would say, coaching and counseling people in functional areas to sort of solve their problems, develop them. And ultimately, you know, at the end of the quarter, at the end of the year or the midpoint, you know, you would have to be held accountable for how much money you were making or losing. So that was sort of the overall high level picture.
That's great. I mean, it seems like relatively speaking to a lot of jobs directly out of business school, that was a pretty direct path to being in charge and having a pretty senior management position and oversight on a lot of aspects of a company. Would you say that's true? Is that kind of a faster route than a lot of MBAs go through?
I would say so. And that's one of the reasons I went to Cameron, because they had a track record of taking former military or high-performing engineers, putting them in the strategy and finance role first while just sort of having them learn the industry and cultivating them, and then immediately placing them in a leadership role to get the most bang for buck. I would say that was probably the quickest operational leadership of my immediate friend group. But a lot of their strengths lie in finance and strategy, so they're doing well equally in those roles, which are less about leadership and more about high-level thinking and advisory.
That's great. And we'll talk about the Kennedy School in just a second, but I'm curious about the career progression. So if someone followed your path, and let's say that they made their career at a company like Cameron, what is the career progression looks like? Like, is there a typical path of how long they would be a plant manager, and then what sort of roles they would go to within a company like Cameron or near adjacent companies that they might leap off into? Just trying to get a sense of like where this sort of career goes and what someone could expect in the long run.
Yeah, great. So that's so the typical career path at Cameron, the president and CEO is a West Point grad, HBS grad, and came up in this program along with several of his deputies. So the career path is the top echelons of leadership. Typically in a role, you spend 2 to 3 years max, possibly shorter depending on needs of the company. Sounds familiar, correct? From our previous careers, needs of the company often dictate, but 2 to 3 years in a role and then you move on. And obviously a lot is dictated by performance, but they expect high performance out of these folks. So you would move between functions. So I did the finance role. This was an operations role, and it wasn't a deliberate rotation, just as the way it fell. I think the next position after that for me would have been a level that was in charge of several plants or many plants or regionally in charge of operations. And from there, I could be put into a marketing technology role or something out of the operations function in order to round you out. The general theory in the company was that of the 4 or 5 primary functions, once you do 3 of them, you can probably pick up the rest for a senior leadership position as a division president or a regional head in a geography.
That's great, man. It kind of strikes me at how many of my classmates have hopped around between different companies, and I think there's something to be said for that. But what I like about the picture you're painting about sticking with one company is you are able to rotate within it, see the different functional areas, and really build up a diverse set of skill sets that would allow you to be a more effective leader within the company or in a similar company.
Yep, and I think so. And it definitely was not a leadership development program. And certain companies have that, which is great. So typically in leadership development programs, they rotate you through functions, which is great because you get a look at each one, get to see which one you like or which ones you're good at, and sort of build up on your weaknesses. At Cameron, when they give you these roles, it's not, you're working under somebody. It actually gives you something that you can break. So you can break a business line like I had. So I'd say that what was nice is they had the confidence to put you into something that actually mattered, that if you broke it, that was a big deal. Conversely, if you did well, you're making the company money, which is, always makes the bosses happy.
That's great. And, I always think about consulting and how there's kind of a career path in consulting if you stay within the firm, and then there's kind of the other path where people will hop off into companies that they work with while consulting. And I'm wondering, does that exist for, in your experience with oil and energy? Like if someone doesn't stay within the company, do they just go to a company very similar to it? Or is there like a near adjacent that you would see people transitioning to if they wanted to get out of the sort of work you were doing?
Yeah, I would say in my role, which was on the general management operations side, the finance role was a developmental role, but the other ones that I would probably have to go to a similar company in the industry, but I would say functionally, legal, finance, certain functions that are somewhat industry agnostic, have and can hop to other industries. So point being, I think most people on my path would go to a similar company, a similar industry. And if they did hop, it would be to go for a hop from one company, that would be go for a promotion. And then I have seen people go into advisory roles, private equity, both on the operation side or the deal side, and even back to or into consulting from that, having direct industry knowledge, which can be powerful in an advisory role, actually having done the work.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, it makes it seems when you say it like that, it's almost like you can choose to do a deep dive on the industry, in which case you can remain in the oil and energy industry or be an expert within private equity or consulting because you're bringing all of that knowledge to them. Or you could really focus on the functional role, and then you're able to take that functional role across different industries and kind of shift horizontally and take that skill set to a different company or different industry. And I think that's an interesting way for someone to think about their career, is whether they want to deep dive on an industry or deep dive on a functional role.
Yep, I agree with that 100%.
And then last question I'd have about Cameron or oil and energy industry in general is, if someone's listening to this and you're piquing their curiosity around this type of company, this type of industry, do you have any sense for signs that they might really like a career in oil and energy, and signs that, like, hey, you may not like this? Any sort of advice for them in that regard?
I would say that the oil and energy industry is generally favorable towards veterans of all ranks and levels, those even transitioning out of junior enlisted to senior enlisted to officers that go to top tier MBAs, even to senior officers that go sixes. I would say those that are more operationally geared, that enjoy program and project management, that's the sort of, it attracts that sort of type, because they are real tangible projects that you push forward. But if you sort of enjoy sort of strategic thinking, those level roles where it's a little bit less tangible, then maybe that's not part of the industry that you'd enjoy. So I would say if somebody's looking for it, I think it's a great time to get into the industry if you can, by the way, right now as we're talking, just because it's sort of at the bottom of a cycle right now. And oftentimes that's a good time to come in, because once things come back, depending what your view is, there is room for rapid advancement and promotion as companies in the industry re-expand.
That's great. And then I'd love to learn about your experience at the Kennedy School, kind of what drew you there, what that experience has been like, and what you're thinking of next.
Yeah, so I was intended to do the Kennedy School. The joint degree between HBS and HKS is a well-trodden path for veterans. But after my time at HBS, I decided I needed to get out in the real world after 2 years at HBS and getting the MBA and do something. Plus, my balance sheet was a little bit hurting at that point after 2 years of grad school, so it was time to go and get a job. And I entered a point in my career where I had serendipitously had the opportunity to come back to HKS for the one-year MPA, which, as I said, was always part of the plan. HKS is great, especially now, having spent years in an industry in several different functions, to be able to bring both the experience in the military, over 9 years in the military, and that, the HBS experience plus over 3 years in the private sector to that. It's a different academic pace than HBS. It's not less, it's just different. And I'm really enjoying it. This semester I'm taking infrastructure focused courses, so and transportation and large scale projects that have civil uses, and I love that. And next semester I'll focus more on government functionality and policy, so all things that are practical, things I'll use. And what's next, I'm still thinking about it. So the political and the government realm certainly have attracted me. I've always thought about pivoting back to the public sector in a meaningful way. I think that veterans, whether you're in a government position in the cabinet department, or you're in politics, or you're in some sort of advisory role, I think they bring a lot to the table. So we'll see what's next. I still have 10 months to decide, so we'll see.
That's great. Well, I know you've covered a lot of different topics and given a lot of great advice. I'm just wondering, in closing, if there's anything else we didn't cover, any advice that you'd pass on, anything that you'd want people listening to know about their civilian career, or anything else you'd like to share.
I would say a lot that I think a lot of stress goes into transition and thinking about what's next, and which is all well intentioned, because it is a stressful experience and because there is a lot of uncertainty around it. I would say that if you're a high performer, or as I said, a good performer, that's a positive attitude that takes a traditional transition route, such as graduate school, or into a company's robust transition program, such as GE with some of their programs. That's just such as many that do. That trust in the system, that being a high performer, that having a positive attitude, being able to get things done, is going to work out. You're going to hit a lot of stumbling blocks along the way. There's going to be a lot of uncertainty, like as we talked about before. There's a lot of opaqueness in your future. But if you just have that positive attitude and keep going forward, you're going to be fine. There's many of us that have transitioned of all levels, from 1 year out to guys that have been retired for many years that have done it successfully. So have a little faith in that, and don't either get scared by the leap or get scared in the transition when you feel vulnerable, where you're out of one world and not quite in the next yet.
That's great. Well, John, I appreciate you taking the time to speak with me and the advice that you're giving to other veterans. And thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
Surface.
All right, gang, that's all for today. A couple quick admin items at beyondtheuniform.io. You will find more resources like data, charts, graphs, and a ton of interviews in the podcast section. If you have feedback, if you have ideas on how to make the show better and how to provide more resources to veterans, please drop me a line at beyondtheuniform.io/ping. Lastly, not endorsed by service to school at all, but it's an organization I've really come to respect based on these interviews. If you are on active duty, or if you're a veteran in general and thinking about going to school, that's grad school, undergrad, med school, law school, any type of academic institution, I definitely recommend you check out Service to School. They provide free resources to veterans. They pair you with someone with a similar background who can guide you through the process of everything you need to know to get into the school that's best for you. That's interview prep, resume help, all sorts of things. So check them out at servicetoschool.org. Have a great rest of the week and looking forward to talking to you soon.